Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
His weight, 231.
Again, Jimmy Lennon.
Yeah. His record, 29 wins, 4 defeats, 1 loss, 1 draw, with 19 wins by way of knockout. He's ranked number 3 by the WBC, number 4 contender in the WBA. Please welcome the challenger, James Buster Douglas.
When the audience in Tokyo and around the world heard those words that day in February 1990, they can be forgiven for perhaps not paying close attention. It was hard for me to get that cut right because people were just screaming and yelling over it. James Buster Douglas's chances of beating the reigning world heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson were 42-1. Coming up, we're going to meet James Buster Douglas 30 years later. But in the meantime, Tim May covered the fight in Tokyo for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Ann.
The good old days when they sent you all the way to Tokyo.
Well, that's a story in itself. I mean, I made that trip all happen for less than $800, you know, and I stayed with John Johnson II in the hotel over there in Tokyo. It was called the, wasn't the Grand Palace, it was something Palace. It was a nice hotel. It's where they put Buster up, you know, and stuff. But, yeah, I scrimped and saved, and the thing is I lost about 10 or 15 pounds on that trip because there was – I'm not kidding you. There was hardly anything over there I wanted to eat. And and I kept telling people, Tokyo, the smell of Tokyo smelled like half-cooked fish. I mean, it was. I'm not slamming it.
Yeah.
That's where you're from, you know. I mean, I'm from Alabama and East Texas and then Ohio, and I'm used to, like, brisket, you know, or something. But it was quite the experience. And like, you just played that cut when they were introducing Buster, and hardly anyone, and I'll tell you about this later after it's over, but – you know,
they weren't paying attention.
The 30,000 that were there were probably 29,550 were Mike Tyson fans.
Right.
You know, it was kind of like they wanted to see their hero, you know, do his thing. I mean, that's why they were there. It was a curiosity. And it's kind of like, you know, when Ohio State plays at home and, you know, plays Bowling Green or somebody, you know what the outcome's going to be, just how big's it going to be.
It was like, you know, the movie Miracle about the U.S. hockey team. It was the last game before they played the game that mattered.
Yes.
And which was Evander Holyfield in that case, which Mike Tyson did not.
Oh, you got to remember, I mean, Donald Trump had flown over there with
right.
they announced the Holyfield Tyson fight the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking some of the Holyfield handlers, well, what happens if Buster beats Tyson? Because I wrote a column the day of the fight saying Buster was going to beat Tyson. But I said, what happens if Buster beats it? And they go, Shelley Finkel and Dan Duva are going, oh, that'll never happen. They started laughing and stuff.
Famous last words, right?
Yeah, there's a great anecdote as the fight goes on. I'm sitting there ringside about four rows back in the press section, and over to my right, one row up, is Dan Duva with Evander Holyfield sitting next to him. And in the fifth round of that fight, when Buster has been tattooing Tyson with his jab and stuff and just beating him up, Dan Duva gets up, and if I remember correctly, the Tokyo Dome was non-smoking, but Dan Duva lit up. He lit up a cigarette and was walking back and forth going, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. He was, as he's walking by me, and I wanted to grab him, so you better believe I tried to tell you last night. Yeah. But, it was crazy.
Crazy time. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with retired sports reporter from the Columbus Dispatch, Tim May, about that day almost exactly 30 years ago, February 11th, 1990, when James Buster Douglas of Columbus beat the unbeatable Mike Tyson in Tokyo. You know, I'd love to hear from listeners who want to look back and recall those days. 614-292-8513. I had only lived here for about a year. I'd moved here to cover State House for the Toledo Blade, so I wasn't super plugged into the city.
Yeah.
But it was a really, really big deal here. On the other hand, the city wasn't what it is today.
Right.
It was a little more downtrodden at the time.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about Buster even, I mean, you know, it's like John Johnson had worked his tail off, because he had gotten Steve Gregory a middleweight, I think it was middleweight, middleweight championship fight in Denmark way back when, a guy from locally, and he believed in Buster Douglas, as just J.D. McCauley, Buster's uncle, ended up being his trainer, but hardly anyone else did, and Buster had gotten a shot at the IBF championship a couple of years before that with Tony Tucker out at the Las Vegas Hilton, and he got beat in the 10th round, The fight was called in the 10th round, technical knockout. And it's really ironic that the biggest fight of his career goes to the 10th round. I'm talking about with Tyson. Mm-hmm. And that's when he won the fight. So most people weren't giving him a great shot. 42-1 was pretty accurate.
And there was a lot of skepticism in that 8th round when Tyson knocked down Douglas. And there was a lot of back and forth afterwards, saying that Douglas was allowed to too much time, too many counts to get up.
Yeah, Buster will tell you this. If anything, he kind of let his guard down. He almost got cocky because he had Tyson against the ropes. And the one thing about Mike Tyson, due to covering Buster, I'd covered several of the Mike Tyson fights through the years, like Frank Bruno and Pinklin Thomas, and some of those, and. The bottom line is he was just born to throw the uppercut. I mean, that was his bread and butter and his steak, all Buster had to do was stay away from the uppercut, and he was going to be fine, because they had great strategy going into that fight and followed it to a T. But then he, let his guard down just a little bit, and Mike Tyson almost saved his championship. I've told people I had more respect for Tyson after that fight than I did before, because he was beaten up and he still almost saved his championship. But yeah, he hits Buster. Buster goes down. Buster rolls over. He's on one elbow and he's like banging the canvas. And you can see he's not knocked out. And his dad, a longtime hard-nosed, grizzled fighter, Bill Dynamite Douglas, he taught him long ago, if you get knocked down, take that extra time to get your faculties together, and then get back up, before the count, before he gets to 10, basically. And the count was slow in starting because Tyson didn't immediately move to a neutral corner.
Okay.
And so, of course, after the fight, Don King tries to basically steal the championship back, claiming slow count and all this kind of stuff. But it's kind of like, the way I looked at it, it's kind of like in a football game, once the next play starts, replay doesn't matter. And that's pretty much how the ruling bodies or the governing bodies saw it, WBA, WBC.
So for people who aren't familiar with boxing, and a lot of people aren't, there's the knockout in the 10th round. But then there's a points system going on, too. There's judges watching the fight.
Yeah.
What's that about?
It's style points.
I mean,
that's why you
if it's a toss-up, then they go with the points?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If it goes, and that was, a 15-round fight, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was still...
It was going to be a 12-round fight.
Okay, I can't remember because it changed from 15 to 12 at one point. But the bottom line is, if a fight ends and both guys are still standing, that's the way they do it in the amateurs, It goes on a point system. And the thing about it is that's extremely arbitrary. And there's some talk, I never got this confirmed totally, but that Tyson was ahead on two of the judges' cards, which made no sense. I mean, because Buster had beaten Tyson up. And it's funny because the reason I wrote the column picking Buster to win the fight was I'd watched Buster get in the best shape of his life. And if you saw him then, as I described it, he looked like a great outside linebacker. He could run. He was cut from
tall.
Physical standpoint. Yeah, he made Tyson look like a peewee. I mean, Mike Tyson was probably maybe 5'10 on his tiptoes.
Yeah.
Although I think they listed him as 5'11. But Buster just looked like a physical specimen you always thought he could be his whole career. And he was ready for that fight. And Tyson was going through a lot of troubles at that point. And the one workout I saw over in Tokyo with him, he just did not look sharp at all, And I picked Tyson. As I like to say, I was an embedded reporter, because I wouldn't have been there if Buster wasn't there.
Right.
If Buster was from, Cincinnati, I wouldn't have been there. He's following my drift. But he was from Columbus, Westerville, et cetera. And so that's why I picked it. But then the fight develop just like John Johnson and J.D. McCauley said he was going to. They had seen Frank Bruno hit Tyson, and Tyson would just stop. But Bruno didn't have the, whatever you want to call it, the confidence or the guts to step in there and hit him again. And Buster did that night. And Buster lorded over him with the exception of one round.
I've read so many accounts of James Buster Douglas and so many people saying he's the nicest person they've ever met.
He's pretty nice.
Really nice guy. We're going to meet him in a few minutes. But one of the things I read that he said is he doesn't like Tyson. And that's part of what motivated him is he just didn't like him.
Well, that's what I wrote about in that thing. I said, you know, there's two things that were going to drive him. Number one, he didn't like Tyson, at least, you know, when I was talking with him about it. And number two, his mother had passed away tragically, suddenly, like
it was three and a half weeks, I think.
And so, he was bound determined to win that fight for her, you know, because some people thought he might want to cancel it or postpone it. And he was determined to go over to Tokyo and take care of business. And he did that. I mean, when you've got all that going for you, but then you have the confidence of knowing you're in the best shape of your life, and you look over there, and yeah, that guy can throw an uppercut, but what else has he got? Tyson didn't really have much else, and Tyson was a shock and awe kind of fighter. He beat Michael Spinks in 93 seconds. Michael Spinks had that great line after that fight. He said, I threw my best jab at him, and he walked through it like he was walking through rain. And then, then it was over. But the thing is, if you could get past the shock and awe, because he was going to come in there and try to finish the fight as fast as possible, then you had a shot. But you had to have ability to do it. And Buster coupled all of that together.
What was it like in that arena, I guess you call it, on that night when they said he's down?
Well, I gave you the Dan Duva example a minute ago. People really couldn't believe what they were seeing.
Yeah.
I've only covered two sporting events where the media section or press row, as it was, stood up when something when it's almost like a standing. Oh my God!
Yeah.
One was the. That fight, and the other was a Christian Laettner when Laettner hit the shot in the Spectrum in Philadelphia to beat Kentucky in that great overtime game in the NCAA Regionals way back in 1992. It's the only time I've ever seen media stand up and go, oh, my God, I'm really seeing this. And that's what it was like. But what was really weird, because Buster, the ninth round, as I've described it, was the greatest round of heavyweight boxing I ever saw because Tyson came out to finish the fight. To finish him off, because the bell rang right after Buster got up, in the eighth round. And in the ninth round, he came up to finish him off. Buster took it, and then Buster, at the end of the ninth, was beating him up again, knocking him back, et cetera. And in the tenth round, the combinations, and then the uppercut. And then Tyson falls, and I'd written it. I expected that to happen. I said it was going to end in the eighth round, not the tenth. Mm-hmm. So it almost did end in the eighth. But then you're trying to get all this in your brain. This is really happening. And then on top of that, you got to understand the fight started, I think, about 10:30 p.m. here. Well, that was 12:30 p.m. the next day in Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
So it had been like a noon fight. Who fights at noon, Nobody except a couple of school bullies. But what was really odd, Ann, is the greatest upset in boxing history just happened. 35,000 people are there, and it was kind of quiet because, like I described to you a minute ago, it's like being in an Ohio State game.
Michigan State beats them?
Michigan State beat them. Except this wasn't Michigan State. In their minds, this was Youngstown State, I don't know. I was very privileged to be there and experience that.
What was Buster like at the time? You were around him?
Buster, see, here's the thing. Buster was cool about the whole thing, at least outwardly, before, during, and after, which I think is the main thing that got him through it all. And, I'll never forget the night before the fight, they did this shakeout thing, and we were staying on the same floor as Buster was. And they did it in front of the elevator banks at this hotel right there on the eighth, I think it was the eighth floor. And Buster just looked, oh, my goodness, he looked good. He'd been dealing with a little bit of a cold or, maybe flu, but it was mainly cold.
'Tis the season, yeah.
Yeah, he'd been dealing with a cold over there. But, man, he was running like a deer. I mean, he and his sparring guys, sparring partners, and some other guys were just running through the streets of Tokyo up in the Grand. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to Tokyo.
No.
But the Grand Palace is just a ridiculous complex.
Uh-huh.
And he'd been just looked like a pure athlete. He was ready to go. And he knew it. You know, he could tell he knew it. He knew it was his moment, you know. It was like, you know, if you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it kind of moment? And I get goosebumps thinking back to it because the preparation he had put in was definitely much more than he had ever done for any other fight. And then it came to fruition.
He had a downturn competitively, personally, for a few years after that. And then he came back and kind of mopped up very nicely the career in the end. I mean, I think he acquitted himself, but he was never what?
Yeah, he was never, and he'll tell you that, he was never the fighter he was after that. And he had had a bout with diabetes, which almost killed him.
Right.
And, you know, and the Holyfield fight, I mean, That was a story unto itself. Just all the bidding, et cetera. Don King and Donald Trump trying to keep the fight in Atlantic City, trying to make that match up. You know, at that point, John Johnson, even Buster, they wanted nothing to do with Don King because Don King had tried to steal the fight back from him. And then he ends up at the Mirage Hotel out in Vegas for the fight with Holyfield, and he was clearly not in the same shape he had been. I still thought he could have handled Holyfield, but he just psychologically and everything else was a different guy. But as I've told him a million times, who cares about that? Because in the long run, you're still known as having pulled the greatest upset, maybe in sports history, but definitely in boxing history. I mean, Miracle on Ice, that was a team, you know?
Yeah.
Boxing, you got your shoes on, you've got gloves on, and otherwise you're in your underwear. I mean, you're the only guy that can do anything about anything once you go into the ring. And he had, not only was he in shape, but he had the guts to get in there with, like, the knockout king of the world and knock him out. I mean, one more kid say, it's really funny because I'm sitting there after the fight's over, you know, and I, you know, 10:30, I told you the fight got over, like 11:15. All this chaos is going on, you know, and but anyway, like 2 hours later, I'm sitting there writing some stories ringside, and this guy came up because I didn't just write that story in the dispatch saying I thought Buster was going to win. I had told other, you know, because nobody over there knew who Buster was, uh-huh. You know. And all of a sudden, I notice his presence, and I look up, and there's a Japanese TV guy, and he's sitting there. And when I look up, he starts bowing to me, and he goes, you're Mr. May, you pick Douglas, you pick winner. And he pulled out, and he slapped his card down in front of me, he goes, later, you, me, we drink. I go, man, I appreciate it, but I'm on deadline here.
That's great.
I guess first time I've ever, and the last time I've ever been bowed to, I tried to teach my wife how to do that. But
good for her.
Yeah.
Tim May, retired sports reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
You got it.
Coming up, we're going to hear from James Buster Douglas, former world heavyweight boxing champion from Columbus. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the improbable feat, the great feat of James Buster Douglas, who 30 years ago on February 11th beat the reigning world champion heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson. The odds were 42-1 by the end of the match, but before the count, the announcers were waking up to the fact that Tyson probably would not be walking away with the title that night.
This has been an inspired, courageous performance by a man whose mother has died within the past month, whose son's mother is battling a difficult kidney ailment, who had every reason to come into this bout depressed and downtrodden.
Joining us now to talk about the win and his life after the win, James Buster Douglas. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Do you ever get tired of talking about it?
No, not at all.
What do you remember most happily about that experience?
Well, being over there with my son, Lamar, you know, having him travel with me to Tokyo and just experience it all.
He was about 11 years old at the time, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about that when I was talking to Tim May, because he said you were calm, cool, and collected and so laid back before, during, and after. And I wondered if having your son there, you know, watching you affected you in any particular way that way.
Yeah, it definitely did. It was a relaxing, enjoyable moment in our lives, you know. We just sucked it up and took it in.
Being able to share it with someone you love.
That's right.
And then, of course, you know, sadly, the death of your mother. And I know it's been 30 years, but it's always hard. I know. And some people thought that that might pull you down, but you ended up dedicating your win that night to her.
Right. You know, she came over to visit me at my house. You know, a week before I left to see how I was doing, but that's how she's always been with me and my brothers, you know, looking out after us and staying on top of us. And, you know, she was just checking to see how I was mentally, because I was going through a lot of things at the time. And, you know, she felt confident after we talked and that everything was going to be all right.
Yeah.
I was going to give it my all.
You went there about a week before the fight? Is that it? 2 weeks before the fight.
2 weeks before the fight.
And some people thought you wouldn't go on because of that, but that motivated you.
Even more inspiration, because, you know, prior to that, it was like every other day or something, I'd get a phone call with some tragedy. Of course, that was nothing bigger than my mom passing, but, you know, I knew, I looked beyond what was going on, that it was something bigger and better on the horizon for me.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is James Buster Douglas, former world heavyweight boxing champion, memorably one of the biggest upsets in sports history, period, when he beat Mike Tyson on February 11th, 1990, in an arena in Tokyo. If you have a question or comment for James Douglas, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You grew up as the son of a boxer, and I read a little bit about that background. Your dad and you had had a falling out, but you did talk to him on the phone. Was it the day before or the day of?
I actually talked to him every day after the training session.
Okay.
You know, we're calling and giving him an update on what I did that day and how I felt, you know, and just the way things were going.
You know, Tim May made the salient point, because I made the comparison to the miracle story about the USA hockey team and you, the improbable win of theirs back in the 80s and in 1980 and yours in 1990. And he said it's real different because it's just you in that ring, you in your shoes and your boxing shorts. And it's not like it's a team situation, but there is a team aspect to it, isn't there?
Oh, most definitely. You know, it was just encouragement and, you know, leading up until the point is just you executing at the end, you know, performing is up to you as the individual, but it's a team effort, you know, people there support you and let you know that, you know, keep the hope up, so to speak, you know, the believing you and know that you have the opportunity to become something special.
I read that you were motivated in part by the fact that you disliked Mike Tyson. And everything I read about you, too, from everybody that knows you well, said you're the nicest person they've ever met. So I'm wondering, what was it about Tyson, if that was true?
Yeah,
and
that,
what it
that's
was
not really true.
Okay.
It was one opportunity to get my chance of beating Mike Tyson. You know, just athletic, competitive thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really didn't know much about him, but other than him being a fierce, you know, champion. And, you know, that's about it. But I just wanted the opportunity to fight him and you know, beat him.
You were 29 years old at the time?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, you look back on your 29-year-old self. What do you think?
Huh?
Just as far as... I guess I'd look back at my 29-year-old self and say I might have done this differently. Not like
you change your
ultimate trajectory of your life, but...
All right. Well, you know, it was just a, I look back and say, well, it was an opportunity and I seized it.
Yeah.
Took advantage of it. You know, it was just a great experience.
You struggled afterward. I guess it's easy to summarize it with your weight, which a lot of people focus on that, which ballooned and that kind of a thing. But it there's all kinds of stuff going on. Again, you're a young guy dealing with a huge success, but also a lot of pressure. You come back. They've got the big parade in Columbus. I went to that. And how did that all feel?
It felt good. You know, it was just a great accomplishment. And I just really, overall, just miss my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just one thing after another. You know, it was like a fireworks. You know, every day it was just boom, 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 boom. Something was going on.
A lot of people want a piece of someone like you when you win something like
that.
Oh,
yeah. You see a lot of different things in life. You looked at differently all of a sudden. Before, you were just a whoever wannabe. Then you become the man and totally different different perspective.
You moved a couple different places, right? Do you still have a place in Florida?
No.
Okay.
No.
Do you live in Columbus now?
Yeah, I live in Columbus.
How come you moved back?
Well, I was ready to come back and be back part of life, so to speak. Because when I went to Florida, it was just like a getaway, just to isolate myself and get my thoughts together. And that was it. And then I was ready to come back, get back into life, so to speak. And I just had to get away. So I'm with my family down in Florida, and we stayed down there a few years and came back.
How do you like it?
Back and being back in Columbus, awesome. Yeah. Ever since I've been back, since the return in '98, it's been a great experience.
Let's see. Josh in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, let me get you on the speaker.
Okay.
I was just calling because I have such fond memories of that era, that time when James Buster Douglas defeated Mike Tyson. I think I was a junior in high school at the time, and we were listening to it on the radio. This was actually, even though it wasn't that long ago, it's hard to imagine in this day and age how technology's changed. But when we heard it, we were driving around honking our horns. And then when Buster came back to Columbus, I was part of the big celebration there at the airport, and ended up getting 5 days of detention because I went to St. Charles, and they were strict as heck. So I skipped the day, got the detention, was there cheering Buster on, didn't get close enough to you to, like, shake your hand or anything. But anyway, it's a fond memory of my life, and I really appreciate James Buster Douglas. He represents spirit of overcoming adversity, which is just truly the greatest of all human interest stories. So I have to tip my cap to you, James Buster Douglas, because I still appreciate, and we still appreciate, that monumental accomplishment. So
Thank you.
A nice day.
Thank you, Josh. Thanks for the call. You must get that a lot.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I read that when you were coming into the airport, when you were disembarking from the plane, you wondered what the crowd was for.
Right, in the terminal. It was a bunch of people at the end of the crowd, and I was telling my friend I was walking with, like, wow, I wonder what's going on down there. Seen a lot of people milling around, you know. Then when I came out, it was like, wow, they're out there for me. That was it. That's when the realization really kicked in.
The people back home were paying attention to
Right.
Before, I mean, people knew when you went, and people were rooting for you, but you were the underdog, and
During the fight, the crowd was so
pro Tyson.
Well, they weren't pro. They were just not really into the fight, so to speak, but that was their culture, you know, just to sit there and watch.
Okay.
Not really be screaming and hollering like they would be here in the States. It was very quiet. It was, you know, docile.
How long has it been since you fought?
Well, actually, I fought a couple of days ago, you know, with the wife. I lost.
Good for her. You've been married a long time.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
That matters, doesn't it?
Most definitely. Yeah, that's an important aspect in my life.
How many kids?
Three boys.
Are any of them?
I know, youngest is a fighter. He fights for me at the rec center.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I have a good time over there. It's like being back in the beginning, but now my father being the head boxing coach of the rec center, you know, leading the guys on. We have a good time over there.
Family tradition.
Yeah, that kicks in, doesn't it?
Yeah, it can. It can. You know, you have, it's sold out now tomorrow night, but you have a fundraiser for an organization. It's called Brightways?
Yes.
Tell me about how you've transitioned your life from a competitor to an enabler, an encourager, someone who wants to lift other people up. How did that come about?
Well, it's just, you know, sharing your life story, your life with another individual, you know, with hope that things will be better and can be better. It's just never giving up and staying positive.
Who do you feel responds the most to that? Everybody loves the story.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's been 30 years, and do kids, do young men, do they respond in a different kind of way?
Most definitely in a positive way. You know, they come over and they hear stories and they've heard stories and then finally getting to meet me and they ask me questions and, you know, we sort of, you know, and I express how I feel about them or about how I felt doing what I did. And it's just, I see the light come on that they too can achieve, you know, a goal in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being successful, staying positive, going through the ups and downs. I tell them, I come from the same area you do, come from the same background, you know, struggles. It was like I wasn't living on another planet and flew in here and won a fight. It was like I had to go through a lot to get that opportunity. So, you know, it's important.
And you were knocked down or not. I mean, that's another thing that people have a hard time grasping, regardless. I mean, whether it's literally as a boxer or figuratively as a human being, just struggling and failing.
Yeah, ups and downs. You know, you got to be sometimes be triumphant. You have to have bad experiences, you know, struggles, life struggle. Everything isn't just laid out there for you where you just walk in and everything is given to you or, you know, works out positively. So I had some ups and downs throughout my career and life as well.
There was you described something when you went down in that eighth round and, you know, the count started and I read a quote from you saying that you were just watching him and thinking about Mike Tyson and just kind of really watching him. And it's a good time to collect your thoughts when you're down, as long as you keep track of the count and get back up in time. But what were you thinking about then?
Well, when I went down, the first thing I did was immediately pick up the count. And it was probably two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just did a good quick body check. And I felt fine, you know, felt more like I was pushed more so than feeling the effects of a punch.
Mm-hmm.
And just gave myself an extra couple of seconds to regroup and gather myself and get focused on knowing that it was a game changer, that it was going to really start getting, you know, hostile even more so than it was before. So I got up and was ready to go. And the bell rung, but I was ready to fight. And when I got up on my feet,
mm-hmm.
So the bell just happened to ring at the time that, you know, we finished the count and I got it back up on my feet. So,
Bill in Delaware, you're on the air with James Buster Douglas. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi. Buster, I'm just curious, where locally did you train? Who were your coaches and influential people here locally?
Well, I trained up in Westerville, Ohio, at a fitness center called Fitness Trend. And that's where I did most of my training at, and, you know, preparation for the fights.
And that's where you grew up?
I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, north end of Columbus.
North end.
went to Leonard McKinley High School. Was on the state championship basketball team in 1977. You know, so
your dad was your trainer for a long time.
Yeah, he started me in boxing at the age of 10 over at Blackburn Recreation Center, and I fought competitively for 5 years, and then I got involved in other sports and came back to it at 21. And then at 21, I turned pro with my dad, and we fought. We were together for about 4 years, and then I got with John Johnson and my uncle J.D. McCauley, and we just went from there.
All the way to the top. Bill, thank you for that call. Anybody else, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to continue our conversation with James Buster Douglas, and we're also going to hear about an event coming up and the beneficiary of the event, the Bright Ways Academy, or the Bright Ways. It's a center. It's not in Columbus, but you're looking to expand it to Franklin County. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We've been talking about the improbable feat, the great feat of James Buster Douglas, who 30 years ago on February 11th beat the reigning world champion heavyweight boxer Mike Tyson. The feat brought attention to his hometown of Columbus, and Douglas has remained most of the rest of his life in Central Ohio, pouring much of his energy and the byproducts of his fame into good works. That includes establishing new outreach programs named after his 42-to-1 odds, and that benefit the Bright Way Center in Jefferson County. It's a nonprofit youth center that emphasizes character and leadership. Still with us is James Buster Douglas. John Pace is executive producer of the World Championship 30th Anniversary Event. That's a fundraiser to benefit an expansion of the Bright Way Center into Franklin County. Welcome to the show. John Pace, you said, well, heck, you didn't have to come on. James was doing just fine on his own. But I'm interested to hear what your perspective is on James Buster Douglas and why he matters to Bright Way.
Well, first, let me be a groupie and tell you I listen to your show all the time. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I was enjoying Buster so much and you that I really wanted to just keep listening.
That's the greatest compliment of all. But you know James Buster Douglas. You've known him for a long time, right?
Since we were 12.
Yeah.
He was the captain of our football team. And 2 years we went undefeated. And he taught me a lot about discipline. I used to be really high strung and subject to be overly emotional. And the James Buster Douglas that you saw in the ring that day, the calm, cool, collective, cerebral James, he's always been like that.
Why do you think?
I think part of it is heredity. His dad was calm, cool, and collective for the most part, particularly when he competed. But he's just a super, super gifted, nice guy. I mean, and when I say nice, he's nice when the microphone is off and the cameras are not rolling. He's just a nice person.
That's pretty nice, James Douglas. I mean, that's a nice thing for people to say. It's all I ever hear.
Well, I'm that guy.
Yeah, but how did
I'm
you get
that
to
guy.
Yeah, you're that guy. You're that one, the nice
I'm
guy.
That guy. Yeah.
Like the gentle giant kind of guy?
Yes.
Did you feel like you had to be nicer because you're just kind of imposing?
Oh, I was just that way because I was just that way. I wasn't aggressive, you know. Really, it took my mom to bring out the aggressiveness in
really?
Me. Yeah, when I was a younger kid, you know, walking home from school one day, this kid was bothering me, you know, messing with me, wanting to, talking about what he was going to do to me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was crying and stuff. He never really touched me. And then I went into the house. My mom seen me walking from down the street, seen a group of kids following me. And then she noticed that I wasn't, you know, like defending myself, or I was just giving in to the guy without just listening to his words. And she grabbed me and roughed me up a little bit and told me if I didn't fight him or anybody else that would mess with me, I was going to have to deal with her. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. So, and then it was like, seemed like as if the next day I went out and another guy was messing with me and I went off and started cracking him, you know, letting my hands go. And, you know, that was it. It just clicked, you know, that I could defend myself. You know, somebody messed with me, that it was all right, you know.
And you could still be a nice person.
And still be a nice person, yeah. So my mom was the one that lit the fires, the fuse, so to speak.
And what an empowering thing to know that you can be defend yourself and be strong but not mean.
Right. It's good. It's a thing that, to really, to me, it seemed like respect. You know, that they know if they do mess with you, that there was going to be some consequences. So that kind of, deferred a lot of people from engaging because they knew that I would fight. But, you know, no matter what the outcome came, that it would be a battle. I wouldn't just surrender. You know?
Was that about the time when you decided to try boxing?
Well, I was already boxing.
Okay.
But I was still...
On a personal level, you didn't want to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would go to the gym every day with my father, you know, but, you know, and as far as the street was just another... I didn't look at it like a boxer or anything. It was just the street, and I wasn't engaging like that. So
yeah. Yeah, his friends were his friends. They weren't afraid of him. You weren't a friend because you thought he'd beat you up if you weren't, right?
No, he was a good friend. Buster, he's kind of like a throwback. Like you think of that old Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver. He would have fit nicely into that neighborhood and into either one of those homes.
The Brightway Center, tell me about why that's something that you care about, Buster Douglas.
Well, it's just they have the same mindset as I do with caring and helping develop others. And so the reunion was, through John Pace, was a perfect fit.
Yeah. What does it make it a perfect fit for you, John Pace?
Well, I've known Buster, and so up until now, his philanthropy, he wouldn't let us talk about it. He has contributed significantly to the homeless. He has sponsored degrees for homeless families and their children, but he refused to let us talk about it. His contributions were directly to the individuals who needed the help, and he didn't want to rob them of their dignity by talking about the contribution or by putting them out publicly. And so now, with this phase of his life, he's decided that we're going to organize his philanthropy, use his brand to make a difference, particularly as it relates to the 42-1 story. Buster's story is very inspirational and encouraging, but he's taken it to the next level now. And so now, with the inspiration and the encouragement, his programs with Brightway will provide the tools to use that encouragement and inspiration to overcome the 42-1 odds, just like he did on February 11th in Tokyo.
I want to turn right now to Henry in Clintonville. You're on the air. Henry, hi.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to mention that Buster is too modest to mention that he has a great boxing facility over there in on West 5th at Thompson Rec Center. And it's just a great place to go, a great place to exercise.
Thank you very much, Henry. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Too modest. Is it modesty?
Modesty, I guess so. Yeah.
Why do you think?
Just the way I am. You know, I've been like this. Not overly aggressive, but, you know, caring. I just care about people. Or care about things.
Yeah. Is that been hard? Was it hard to maintain that kind of wonderful trait? In the business you were in, in boxing, in that kind of showboaty atmosphere that a lot of us on the outside see boxing as?
Right. Not really. You know, I do like to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So I just looked at it as a competitive venture, you know, just competing. As far as the flash, it just, and the lights just came with it. But my main thing was just to show my wares and my talent.
It would be a great era to think that this nice guy is not a competitor. We won the championship 2 years in a row largely because he is a competitor, but he leads by example and he's cerebral. So he doesn't get overly emotional to the point where he can't think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so that's why I was interested in that moment when he was knocked down in the eighth round. And he said he was just thinking and watching Mike Tyson. And I'm thinking, wow, did it go into a slow-mo kind of a thing for you at that time where you were able to think, but you're used to that?
I was focused. And I wasn't really hurt to where I couldn't, you know, function, because if it would have been time in the eighth round, you'd have seen it. I was able to come back and fight, you know, with the same intensity. It was just a flaw. You know, my father, when I came back to Columbus, when I went to see him, the first thing he was saying, yeah, you got to mind your work. That's the first thing he said to me.
Wow.
And that's what it was. You know, I was looking at him like, you know, having a brief moment of reflection in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
So what do you think about me now? And he showed me.
I might be down, but
right.
Were you looking at him? Was he looking at you?
Yeah, he was looking at me. Yeah, hoping I wouldn't get up. You know.
Let's see, Robert in Johnstown, you're on the air. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Mr. Douglas.
How you doing, Robert?
All right, I believe you had a house on Marco Island when I lived down there.
Right.
And then you bought a ranch out on, the Jib Jab Ranch out on Sportsman Club in Johnstown, is that right?
Yeah, it was called the Quick Jab Ranch.
The Quick Jab.
Quick Jab.
Do you
Quick
still
Jab.
Have that?
No, I don't.
Ah, because I'd seen you driving up and down the road, and you actually shook my hand one day. I'm a disabled veteran in a wheelchair. And so I hadn't seen you out there for a while and just was wondering if you had moved on. But,
yes, I have.
All right, brother. Well, thank you for all you do for the community, and God bless you.
Nice talking to you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
We have like 1 minute, and I wanted you, I know there's like maybe a table left, John Pace, but tell us what's going to happen at the event.
Oh, it's going to be great. So you'll have fireside chats with Buster talking with a lot of sports personalities that you all know from Columbus.
Including Tim May, right?
Tim May, and I won't name them because I'll forget someone, but all of the favorite sports personalities, that anchor persons, Tim May. And so they'll be analyzing the fight, telling anecdotes that happened behind the scenes. You'll get to hear from John Johnson and J.D. McCauley. You'll get to meet John Russell, who was in Buster's corner and still remains his great friend. You'll hear stories that you've never heard before. Of course, Archie Griffin, the 2-time Heisman Trophy winner, is the honorary chairperson. He'll be there. It's just going to be a lot of fun. Good food, fun people, nonstop entertainment all evening.
Are you up for it?
I'm looking forward to it. I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
Why?
It's been a great opportunity to just, you know, share my experiences and, you know, just to keep the ball rolling in a good faith, positiveness, full of positiveness.
Well, James Buster Douglas, thank you so much for carving some time out for us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having us, Ann. You got a great show.
Thanks.
Glad to be a part of it today.
That's James Buster Douglas, former world heavyweight boxing champion, probably one of the greatest sports upsets in the history of sports in February 11th, 1990, 30 years ago. So if you want to learn more about that, we'll have some links on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. That's it today. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for those great calls. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.